NFL exhibition. Cincinnati won 31-17 at Washington.
With all of the recent tornado damage and storm activity here in West Alabama, Alpha Insurance and hometown agent Jeff Nee can help you personalize your insurance needs. Remember, the more you protect, the more you save. With a helpful customer service team here to serve you in Alabama and over in Mississippi, you can count on Alpha to provide an insurance plan that provides the protection you need, the convenience you expect, and the service that you deserve. For all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs, call Alpha agent Jeff Nee at 205-758-2577. Once again, 758-2577, or drop by their office on McFarland Boulevard East, Suite 101 in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And remember, Alpha agent Jeff Nee, the more you protect, the more you save. This is the Stingray Show, and coming up on this edition, we are going to be discussing Brian Kelly and the LSU Tigers, as this is the LSU Preview Show. And at SEC Media Days, LSU got 20 votes from the media that they were going to win the SEC Championship this year in Atlanta. Hunt Palmer will join us right after this open to do a deep dive into LSU and can they go back to Atlanta under Brian Kelly.
Hi, this is Tim Brando with a reminder. Those of you on Tide 100.9, look out. You're about to feel the buzz of Stingray.
This is Stephen Ray, a.k.a. Stingray, coming to you live from Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
I'm Heath Hopkins. I'm here in DeSoto County, Mississippi, right outside of Memphis, Tennessee. You know, Mark, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you feel that responsibility to pay it forward and give some kid a chance coming up in the ranks kind of like Tony did for you?
Why do you think I'm talking to Stingray tonight?
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
No, I mean, it's look. No. Hey, Stingray, mm-hmm. Here's the deal. When you get involved with Texas, it's like getting married to a stripper. And let me explain this. It looks good, kind of sexy on the surface. Yeah, but then you get the baggage, you get the drama, you get all that eventually comes with it. And that's what you get with Texas, and that's what the Big 12 learned.
And Heath, any thoughts on our show moving forward?
Hey, to everyone in Tuscaloosa listening here on Tide 100.9, with the Stingray Show, if you don't like it, you better learn to love it, because it's the best show going today, baby. Woo!
And with that, I want to welcome you inside the LSU Fighting Tigers Preview Show. And LSU went 9-4 last year under Brian Kelly, and he is now entering his fourth season down at LSU. The expectations are back through the roof there in Baton Rouge, and who better to bring on to talk about the LSU Tigers than a guy who covers LSU Sports Radio Network postgame and pregame show on 104.5 ESPN right there in Baton Rouge, Mr. Hunt Palmer. Hunt, how are things with you this evening as we sit here just a few weeks away from LSU at Clemson?
Things are good. The anticipation is very, very high here in Baton Rouge. It was a quick summer down here with the baseball team working all the way through June and winning the 8th national championship in program history. And now it's time to turn the page to football, and the expectations are just about that high for Brian Kelly this fall.
So if you would briefly recap last year's 9-4 season, because the Texas A&M game was a head scratcher for me, because when Texas A&M went to the backup quarterback, LSU had no answer for Marcelo Reed.
Yeah, I mean, they started the way they started the last five seasons. They lost the opener. They went out to Las Vegas and lost to USC. But then they found a little bit of a momentum, found a little bit of a stride. They beat a really good Ole Miss team in overtime in Tiger Stadium in a game they never led until they won the game with a touchdown in overtime. Just before that, they beat South Carolina, who was a good team. They went on the road, were down 17-0 that game and won it. And all of a sudden found themselves in the top 10, and they went to College Station. And A&M and LSU were the only two unbeaten teams in the SEC left. Right. And they took a commanding lead in that game early. They were clearly the better team in the first half of that game. And then Garrett Nussmeier threw an unforced interception, and A&M made a quarterback switch, and Marcel Reed ran for a bajillion yards. He only threw the ball one time in the game. And LSU could not stop him from running, unless you turned the ball over two more times in the second half, and it was just an avalanche in College Station they couldn't overcome. And they went into a bye week, and they had a big showdown with Alabama, and they were still right there with two losses, had a chance to get to the finish line and make the playoff. They could not stop Jalen Milroe from running the ball. He ran wind sprints up and down Tiger Stadium in the rain that night, and Alabama absolutely annihilated LSU. And the Tigers went to Gainesville the next week and lost their third game in a row to DJ Lagway and the Gators. And at that point, the season from a playoff perspective was cooked. They rebounded and took care of business against Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, and then won a bowl game against Baylor. But 8-4 is not going to do anything for anybody around here, and last year didn't do anything for anybody around here.
So, Hunt, when you look at the skilled positions, let's start with Nussmeier coming back at quarterback. Where would you like to see him take the next step as a quarterback for LSU this season?
I don't know if a lot of people realize this. He threw for more than 4,000 yards last year. It was the second most passing yards in a single season in LSU history. It was more than Jaden Daniels in his Heisman year the year previous. Only Joe Burrow's ridiculous year in 19 was better in the history of the school. He's got to do a couple things better. One, he's got to cut down on the needless interceptions. He's going to throw some interceptions. He's a pocket passer. He's an anticipation thrower. He's going to throw some interceptions, and that's okay. You can't throw them when the defense doesn't force you to throw them. And he did that too often last year, especially the first one against Texas A&M, where all he's got to do is either run for 5 yards, throw it to the short guy that's open, or throw it out of bounds instead of winging it back over the middle of the field, which had nothing to do at all with Texas A&M's defense. It was just a bad decision and opened the floodgates. He's got to stop doing that. And the second thing is he needs to run a little bit more. He's never going to run for 1,000 yards like Jaden Daniels. But you have to show defenses that you're a little bit of a threat to run. And keep in mind that, of course, running for 4 or 5 yards is significantly better than throwing a forced interception or even throwing the ball away. So he's worked on both of those things. This is his first opportunity to self-scout in an offseason where he's played a lot of football. It's nice to watch Jaden Daniels run the offense. It's another thing to run it yourself and then figure out where your mistakes were. So he's really good. He's going to have a great year, but he's got to clean up on some things if LSU is going to be as good as they want to be.
You always worry about losing someone like Nussmeier during the season or even here before the season begins. If he is injured and can't go, what do the backups look like for this LSU football team?
The backup quarterback's a tough spot in this era in college football because your backup usually leaves. And LSU had its backups leave. You had Ricky Collins go to Syracuse and you had AJ Swan go to Appalachian State. So what they had to do was go into the transfer portal and try to find someone who was comfortable sitting on the bench, which is hard to do. But they did. They went and found Michael Van Buren from Starkville, where he was at Mississippi State, started 8 games last year when Blake Shapen got hurt, threw for 300 yards on Georgia. He was in a really bad spot last year with that Mississippi State roster, which was putrid on defense especially, and did okay. And he came to Baton Rouge and is now slated to be the backup for Garrett Nussmeier. He's had kind of a bumpy fall camp. I thought he had his best day that I had seen back on Friday when we watched him. But it appears that on Saturday, he got a little banged up. His hand was in a wrap this morning when we went out to practice. So he's the backup. Colin Hurley, who was a 3-4-star prospect, but enrolled at just 16 years old into college last year, was 17 during the season. Then in January, was involved in a one-car accident where he collided with a tree and was found unresponsive. So it's a serious deal. He had to spend the last semester of the spring in Tampa with his family recovering from that. So he's very young and he's very inexperienced. So right now it's Van Buren. This would be a severely compromised team if Michael Van Buren had to play quarterback. They're going to put a ton on Garrett Nussmeier's plate, and Michael Van Buren's not ready to handle that. So if Nussmeier were to miss 6, 8, 10 weeks, it would all but end LSU's season.
So on August the 10th, there was a little bit of troubling news down at LSU. LSU Tiger freshman running back JT Lindsey turned himself into authorities. Give us an update on that situation as you know it.
Yeah, so I'm one of those that am really going to let the courts work as far as how that plays itself out. I can tell you this, the charges were stemming from a situation where two men wanted for murder reportedly stayed at Lindsey's dorm while in that process. I do know that LSU spends fall camp in a hotel, so Lindsey would not have been sleeping in the dorm at that point. He turned himself in. He's been suspended from the team. Okay. What he knew, what authorities now know, and what the result of that's going to be, I have no idea. Right. But what we know right now is that Lindsey turned himself in and he's suspended from the team, which compromises LSU's depth at running back. They now only have 3 scholarship running backs on the roster. They've moved Juwan Johnson to running back. He is an incredibly decorated high school player. He's the most productive player in the history of the state of Louisiana in terms of yards from scrimmage and touchdowns scored in the high school ranks. He was a quarterback at Lafayette Christian. He started his LSU career last year as a safety, but when John Emery, the running back, tore his ACL, he went and played running back last season. Then in the spring, they moved him to quarterback to help with some wildcat packages to be a threat running the ball in the red zone. And then once JT Lindsey was suspended, now he's moved back to running back. So Johnson's been all over the place now. Lindsey's away from the team, and that's kind of where those things stand there.
So, Hunt, hold that thought. We are up against our first break of the evening, and when we come back, we are going to continue to dive into the running back position and then get to the wide receivers. That's on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Stingray Show, the LSU preview show. Will return right after this. Residents of Tuscaloosa, are you guys upsizing, downsizing, looking for college housing, or even relocating for your job right here to Tuscaloosa? If that's the case, then you need to contact Celeste Hagler, owner and operator of First Class Real Estate South Home Group, right here in Tuscaloosa. She can help you with the buying, selling, and investment needs throughout the state of Alabama. You can contact Celeste at 205-861-5698. Reach out to Celeste again at 205-861-5698 and schedule a consultation to discuss your real estate goals and to live where you love in the state of Alabama. It's dinner time, West Alabama, and if you are craving fried catfish with tartar sauce on a grilled bun, or maybe even a fried chicken tender with Swiss cheese, grilled onions, and an avocado spread on French bread, that sandwich is called the Jose, then you need to check out the Coker Market, which is located at the four-way intersection just off County Road 140 in Coker, Alabama. Their hours of operation is Wednesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. Go and check out the Coker Market off of County Road 140 there in Coker, Alabama, for community goods and wonderful barbecue. For over 100 years, the Bank of Moundville has been a name clients can trust. The Bank of Moundville is more than just a bank. They're your neighbors, your friends, and your community partners. Their unique approach to financial education has always centered around families. They believe that financially strong homes today lay the foundation for a brighter future for tomorrow's generation. You can call them today at 205-371-2227. Once again, that is 371-2227 to schedule an appointment to build your financial security. The Bank of Moundville is a member FDIC and an equal housing lender.
A national championship team covering a national championship team. The best sports talk in the state. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back inside the Stingray Show. This is the LSU preview show. My guest this evening is Hunt Palmer, who covers LSU, the pregame and the postgame. They are on the radio for the football team. And Hunt, before the break, we were talking about the quarterback position, and we briefly touched on the running back position as we were talking about JT Lindsey and that situation. But outside of him, continue to talk about the major depth issue at running back at that position for LSU, please.
Yeah, you know, with Juwan Johnson moving over, it's not great in terms of depth, but the talent level is high. Caden Durham comes back. He was tremendous as a true freshman last year. He's a little bit short, but I wouldn't call him undersized because he's really well put together. He's 5'9". He's got track speed, and he was sensational last year. He's had a very good camp. Behind him, it's kind of a fight for that next spot. You got Caleb Jackson, who is a junior now. He is incredibly big. He's incredibly physical. He's incredibly fast. But he hasn't been productive in his 2 years. There are concerns about his vision. But as far as big, fast, strong, he's what they look like. And the kind of thought was he may transfer. He didn't play very much last year, but he is back. And they're going to give him an opportunity to be the second team back. But right behind Caleb Jackson is Harlan Berry, who was the number one running back in the country last year out of the city of New Orleans, where LSU has found some great running backs over the years. Of course, Leonard Fournette, a New Orleans native. And Harlan Berry is a little bit skinny right now, but he is electrifying with the ball in his hands. He's got incredible speed. He's got incredible shiftiness. He's great with the ball, and he can catch it out of the backfield as well. So I think on third downs, you very well may see Harlan Berry out there in the screen game, in the bubble screen game, and then, you know, just running the ball on the perimeter because he's so explosive with the ball in his hands.
Now let's move to the wideouts and the wide receivers. Talk about that position of who you think Nussmeier is going to get the ball to often.
So the wide receivers at LSU have been star-studded over the years. The names are very familiar to folks. Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham. It's been an amazing run of high-level All-American, Biletnikoff, first-round type wide receivers. I don't know if LSU's got a first-round pick on this wide receiving core. I don't know if the Biletnikoff Award winner is going to come. But I do know they've got seven or eight guys at wide receiver that absolutely on an SEC Saturday can go catch 80 yards worth of balls for two touchdowns. I mean, they've got incredible talent there. I think Chris Hilton is, to me, the best wide receiver on this team. He's battled injuries for 3 years, but he is one of the fastest players in college football. And every time he is healthy, he makes huge plays down the field. He did it twice against Oklahoma last year and once in the bowl game, coming back from injury, which he missed most of the season. He was in the same class as Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, who are now second-year pros, and he was the highest-recruited guy in that group out of Louisiana. He's awesome. Aaron Anderson caught 800 yards worth of balls last year and should be a really productive player this year. They bring in Berry and Brown, who set a bunch of records at Kentucky, including most kickoff returns in SEC history for touchdowns. They also bring in Nick Anderson, who set Oklahoma's record for freshman touchdown catches 2 years ago with 10. So he's a playmaker. They've got Kyle Parker and Xavion Thomas, who are really having a great camp. Xavion Thomas has run three kickoffs for touchdowns back in his college career, two at Mississippi State, one at LSU. So it's a load of talent and depth at wide receiver. They will have no issues there. Again, maybe not the top receiver in the draft like they do have sometimes, but they got about eight guys that can go with it.
Now let's move to the offensive line. How strong of a group is that going to be this season for LSU? Because LSU is known over the years of having great tight ends and great offensive linemen to be able to run it down your throat when they need to.
I don't think it's hyperbole to say it's the biggest question mark on the team, and it will probably determine what the fate of the season is. I think that every other position on the field for LSU, offense and defense, is very, very good. Okay. There's a chance the offensive line is very, very good. There's a chance the offensive line is not good at all.
Right.
And that's the concern. They are still shuffling pieces 2 weeks out from game time. We went out to practice on Monday morning, and they had moved Carius Kern, a true freshman, out to right tackle with the first team. He had not played there the first 3 weeks of camp. They're still shuffling left guards. They've got a first-year player at left tackle. They've got transfers at center and right guard. It's a lot of an overhaul from last year's group that had four starters drafted, including Will Campbell, who's a top-five pick. So if that's a good offensive line, I would pick LSU to probably go 11-1 and be a playoff team. If it's a bad offensive line, then they're not going to be able to run the ball, which they have not been able to run the ball for 2 years outside of Jaden Daniels doing it himself.
Yeah.
And without being able to run the ball, teams will pin their ears back and go after Garrett Nussmeier. They had four NFL guys to block that last year, and they did a really good job. They don't have that this year. And then if the pressure gets to Nussmeier and the mistakes come, you can see it all falling apart. So that is unquestionably the biggest concern for LSU, and I think it's going to be a make-or-break deal for the season.
I kind of want to push back a little bit and ask you about that. Kaden Durham last year started the season so red hot running the ball, and then in the second half of the season, it was like, oh, yeah, we're not going to use him. I mean, he was leading the SEC in a lot of rushing categories. Average, per carry. I mean, it was off the charts, amazing, best in the SEC. And then it just like, okay, we're not going to use him anymore. What happened with that? Is it play calling?
Well, they were not good at getting a push against good fronts. The exception to that was South Carolina when Durham 4-7 missed tackles in that game and really kind of did it himself. In the game against South Alabama, he dislocated two toes, and that lingered. He had an insert put into his cleat, and that was in there for a while. He still gutted it out, still played hard, still played tough, but may have lost half a step because of that. And, you know, it's a situation where you get behind and then you have to start throwing it. And they were behind the whole Alabama game. And they ran the ball okay against Florida, and they got into the red zone and couldn't figure it out from there. But I think that there's a combination of getting behind and then the injury to his foot that probably caused the running game to take a step back.
Yes.
You know, Hunt, we've been talking to a lot of people, and everything's all over the place with this LSU team. Some people are predicting LSU to be in the playoffs. Some people are predicting LSU to be in Atlanta. Some people are predicting Garrett Nussmeier to win the Heisman. And on the opposite of that spectrum, like, Brian Kelly's not going to make it to the end of the season. This might be a 7-5 team. You know, everything just keeps going one extreme or the other. I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's going to be anywhere close to what LSU fans think it was going to be. I don't think it's going to be anything close to what the haters of LSU want it to be. I think this is going to be 8-9-10 win team. 8 wins. Does that get Brian Kelly fired?
No. He's owed $60 million. LSU's not cutting a check to $60 million when you got to pay the whole team, and then you got to pay a new coach $80. It's just not reasonable or realistic for this LSU fan base in this era. They have not run out of money yet. They paid Ed Orgeron to leave and then hired a $100 million coach. And then 2 years later, paid his entire defensive staff to leave and hired a new staff. And then they went out and signed the number one portal class in the country, which ain't cheap. They have kept up with the Joneses financially to this point. I don't know if that's realistic. And it certainly isn't if you pay Brian Kelly $60 million to walk out the door and then have to hire a new coach for, like I said, $80. That financially doesn't work. You're much better off continuing to keep Brian Kelly and sinking that money back into the roster with the revenue sharing that comes from the program and then the NIL that can come on top of that. So, no, I don't think anything on the field would cause Brian Kelly to lose his job this year.
One thing I want to ask you before we get to defense, I think Nick Anderson's going to be the best wide receiver in the SEC this year. He did not get a single catch last year at Oklahoma, but the year before, the man blew it up. One of the best receivers in all of America. What is it?
Can we do this when we come back? I've got to throw it to break real quick, and then I'll let you come back and ask that.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Okay. So, Hunt, we are up against yet another break, and when we come back, we are going to continue the LSU preview show talking about the defense, and then we will get to the schedule that's on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Stingray Show, and we will be right back on the LSU preview show. Through August the 19th, these amazing deals are going on at South's Finest Meats, including one dozen of Grade A Extra Large Eggs, $3.38. Crinkle Cut Fries, which is a 5-pound bag, $6.96. 30 count of Southern Style Pillsbury Biscuits at $9.49. And a 14 count of Corn Dogs, $8.45. They also have great deals on chicken, pork, seafood, Ziegler products, and of course, beef. You can find them at 3201 10th Avenue right there in Tuscaloosa. Go by there today and check out all of their specials that run through August the 19th. Hey, you. Looking to upgrade your ride? Alabama One has you covered with auto loan rates as low as 3.99 APR. Up to $500 cash back, and the best part, no payments for 90 days. That's right. Buy or refinance and keep the cash in your pocket while you drive the ride you want. But hurry, this limited time offer ends October the 31st. You can apply today at alabamaone.org or by calling 1-800-225-0110. Once again, auto loan rates as low as 3.99 APR, up to $500 cash back, and no payments for 90 days. Remember, Alabama One, one together.
Roll Tide, the best sports talk, period. Your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back to the Stingray Show here on Tide 100.9. I'm Heath Hopkins. Along with me is Stephen Ray. Tonight, our guest is Hunt Palmer. We're talking about LSU here in our preview show countdown as we cover all 16 teams. And right now, we're talking about the Tigers. And before we get to defense, I want to add one little question about offense before we hit the defense. Nick Anderson, blew it up at Oklahoma 2 years ago, didn't have a single catch last year, was injured all year. He is now at LSU, got in the portal. I was so shocked at how quick that happened. He got in the portal, was at LSU very quickly. With all of that being said, I'm a believer in Nussmeier. I believe he's going to feed Nick Anderson the ball. Am I wrong thinking Nick Anderson is going to lead the SEC in receiving yards here in 2025?
I wouldn't bet on that, but it wouldn't be the craziest thing that happened. Nick Anderson set the Oklahoma record for freshman touchdown catches with 10 2 years ago. He brings to LSU something they don't have in the rest of the wide receiver core. It's size and frame. He is all of 6'3", maybe 6'4", and is physical and can stretch the field in that way. They've got a lot of other different types of receivers. Chris Hilton and Barron Brown are absolute burners, but are closer to 6 feet tall. Aaron Anderson's 5'8", and a great slot guy. Kyle Parker is kind of in that mold as well. Anderson brings the size, and he wasn't able to play last year, as you mentioned, for Oklahoma. He only played in one game and didn't have a catch. He came to LSU in the spring, was still nursing that injury. It was hamstring, hip, quad, something in that area, and he didn't go through team periods in the spring. Then he came back in the fall and was involved in an auto accident and had a concussion that cost him the first 2 days of practice. But now, fortunately, almost 20 days into August, he is practicing full and he's working with the second team. I do expect him to play a lot. I expect him to catch the ball a lot. I think Chris Hilton is the best receiver on LSU's team, and I think that he'll be the number one guy. Aaron Anderson's the top returning guy. But if Anderson hits his stride, he does bring something to the table that those other guys aren't physically capable of bringing. So I think it was a great portal ad. We'll see how much fruit it bears. It was a very, very high upside ad, and they've got a lot of options out of wide receiver. Anderson's certainly one of them.
If you had to guess the top three receivers for LSU's team this year, or that'd be a running back out of the backfield, who are the top three receivers you think?
I think Chris Hilton and Aaron Anderson 1-2 for me, and then I would probably put Barron Brown third. Okay. But I could listen to a case for Bauer Sharp. I could listen to a case for Nick Anderson. I could listen to a case at this point for even Kyle Parker, who's done a really good job in camp. So it's an embarrassment of riches at wide receiver. It really is. You don't want to deal with this, but they could deal with an injury or two at wide receiver and really not miss a beat.
Now, you talked about when we first brought you on, as we're switching gears to the defense, that LSU had an issue last year of stopping the run, and especially Marcel Reed at Texas A&M. How does the run defense and the defensive line look for LSU this season?
They went shopping hard for defensive linemen. There's no shortage now. They've got eight guys they're going to cycle through on the defensive front that they feel really good about. It starts with the tackles, where you've got Dominic McKinley and Ahmad Bro back as sophomores. They both played a lot as true freshmen, which you don't want to have. You don't want true freshmen playing defensive tackle in the SEC. They did it. They're back for a second year. Bringing Jacoby and Guillory, he was out all of last year with a torn Achilles in week two. He's a sixth-year senior who's got a really high floor for him. And really the standout of camp so far has been Bernard Gooden. He is a transfer defensive tackle from South Florida. He's on the smaller side, like 275 pounds, but he's incredibly quick, incredibly disruptive. He had 10 tackles for loss last year against at South Florida. And he's really in the mold of Kyle Williams, who was a great player at LSU, 13-year NFL vet, who's first-year defensive tackles coach at LSU. They really think the world of him. And when we've been out of camp, he's been unblockable for a lot of the portions. So that's four guys at tackle they feel really good about on the ends. The only returner is Gabe Relaford, that I expect to get significant time. But they go to Florida and get Jack Clyburn, who made 60 tackles against the run last year and is just a really physical run defender. They got Patrick Payton, who had monster 3 years at Florida State, had nearly 30 tackles for loss, nearly 20 sacks. He's an incredible talent that should be really disruptive. They go to Nebraska and get Jamari Butler, who is big, physical, fifth-year player, 265 pounds, and they're going to cycle those four guys through as well. So they should be far more stout up front. And to your point, which I'm sure we'll get to the secondary, but you're talking about stopping the run. They gave up way too many big plays.
Yeah.
Big plays in South Carolina on the ground to Rocket Sanders and Lenore Sellers. Nichols busted two long runs against them, which is inexcusable. You had Jalen Milroe just running wind sprints down the field, which was pathetic as well. Marcel Reed, they couldn't tackle. Some of that was on the awful, awful, awful safety play LSU had last year. Brian Kelly mentioned it multiple times. We've got to get better at safety. We've got to get better at safety. They've gotten a lot better at safety. They went and got transfers to Marcus Gooley from NC State and A.J. Halsey from Houston, and both those guys are physical and will make plays against the run game, so that those six-yard gains, which aren't going to kill you, don't turn into 60, which will. And that's – they've got to be better at that.
You know, Hunt, we've been asking everybody this question on the show, all 16 teams. With this defense – and I'll ask you about the offense too – with this defense, if you had to guess by season's end, Are they ranked in the top half of the SEC or the bottom half of the SEC?
Well, it's the defense in 2023 that was the worst in the history of the school. And last year they got better, but they were still terrible. They were 15th against the run last year. They got the most rushing touchdowns in the league last year. So they've been bad for 2 years. They're going to be good this year. The floor for every level of that defense is incredibly high. I don't know what the ceiling is. I don't know if it looks like the elite defenses in the history of LSU with 03 and 11 and even some of 19. It was really good, even though they were bad early in the season. This is going to be a very, very solid defense, and I would put them in the top half of the SEC and not really think twice about it.
What about the offense? Is it a no-brainer? Because I think it is. They finished the top half of the SEC.
It depends on the offensive line. If the offensive line crumbles and they can't block, it will fall apart because Nussmeier can't get away, and if they can't run, they'll pressure him, and then he'll be rushed, and it can fall apart. But if the offensive line is just a 6.5 out of 10, they'll be really good. But that's right now just not a guarantee because they just haven't looked very good to me. We had more access this year than we've ever had in fall camp. I've probably watched 11 hours of football practice, which is almost unheard of this day and age, especially in the SEC. And they just don't run the ball very well, and the defensive line is getting pressure on Nussmeier a lot. Now, I think the defense is good, which is part of the equation anytime you watch practice. Anytime something good happens, the other side's doing something bad. But it's been pretty one-sided in favor of the defensive line to this point. So my concern level is high with the offensive line. But, if they're good, they'll throw for 4,000 again.
Mm. So, Hunt, I do have a listener question coming in. What have you seen from defensive line coach Kyle Williams, and how is he getting the defensive line prepared for this year's SEC talent?
Yeah, it was an interesting hire. LSU's had 8 defensive line coaches in the last 6 seasons. That is correct. They have changed midseason twice. Wow. So they had no continuity there. And they thought they were going to get that with Bo Davis, who was coming back to his alma mater from Texas. And then after 1 year, he left to win coach the Saints. So they've got Kyle Williams now. Feel like he's probably not headed anywhere anytime soon. He's not chasing money. He played 13 years in the NFL and just got off the field. They pried him from Ruston High School, where he was coaching the defense and playing some golf. And they got him to come handle this. And he's into it, man. And I think that he's going to, one, provide some continuity for a couple of years. And two, he's as accomplished as they come. And while he doesn't have any college coaching experience, which I can understand that being a red flag, he's coached high school the last 2 years. That's positive in the world of recruiting to relate to those players for 2 years. And nobody's got more skins on the wall than he does. He's been a multi-time Pro Bowler and All-Pro and one of the best players defensively in Bills history. So I think he'll do a really good job at LSU.
Okay, and I've got another one. This comes in from former tight end at LSU, Logan Stokes. He wants to know about Corey Raymond and how this year's secondary matches up with some of the ones that he's had in the past.
Corey Raymond got away as Brian Kelly took the job, and that was a mistake. He went to Florida because Brian Kelly didn't retain him, and it was a mistake. And they corrected it and brought him home. Corey Raymond architected one of the most consistently dominant units in college football with LSU's corners and secondary over the course of a decade. And that talent level fell off a cliff when he left.
Right.
And it showed. And it's coming back. They've got the number one cornerback in the country. He's a true freshman this year in DJ Pickett. He's developing some guys. And I've watched the last 2 years of camp, and they hadn't covered anybody in camp. Just hadn't covered anybody. And that's kind of carried over into the fall. They're covering this year. They're holding their own against a great wide receiver core every day. So, no, I don't see the Thorpe winner. I don't see Patrick Peterson, Derek Stingley right now. But I do see 6 guys at corner that can play and probably 3 that can really play. They brought in Mansoor Delane from Virginia Tech, who's a 2-year starter. Ashton Stamps has been a starter for 2 years at LSU. And I mentioned Pickett, who's 6'4", which is freakish as a corner. The talent level is reemerging, and that was always going to happen when they brought Corey Raymond back.
Hunt, who's one guy on this defense LSU just absolutely cannot afford to have get hurt and injured this year, miss some time?
I would say Whit Weeks. He was 2nd in the SEC in tackles last year, top 10 all time in a single season for LSU. He's the heartbeat of the defense. He's the middle of the defense. They don't have a proven linebacker opposite him. His older brother is going to play the other inside linebacker. West will be next to him. They've got a couple of sophomores, 2nd-year players that would be the next men up. But they don't fill that role like Whit Weeks does. So he would be the most difficult guy to replace, I think.
So, Hunt, we are up against our final break, and when we come back, we are going to dive and navigate into the schedule. That's on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Stingray Show. We will finish it up right after this.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Wednesday edition of The Game, we'll talk to Alex Scarborough from Bama 247 Sports. We'll also talk with Aaron Torres from Fox Sports, all starting at 2 p.m. here on The Game on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa. The Game with Ryan Fowler. Weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
How would you like to live where you love in the state of Alabama? Whether it is your upsizing, downsizing, retiring at the beach, or relocating for your job, then you are going to want to contact Celeste Hagler, owner of First Class Real Estate South Home Group, with brokers in Tuscaloosa, Orange Beach, and Huntsville. They can help you with the buying, selling, and investment needs throughout the state of Alabama. You can contact Celeste at 205-861-5698. Once again, that is 205-861-5698, and schedule a consultation to discuss your real estate goals anywhere across the state of Alabama. Has it always been your dream to build the pond of your dreams, but you don't know if property you own or thinking about buying has a good location to build a pond on? You need to contact Honey Hole Fisheries right here in Tuscaloosa County, because Jeff Bagwell will help you decide if property you own or are thinking about buying has a good location to build a pond. You can contact Honey Hole Fisheries at 205-799-0192. Once again, that is 799-0192. And hey, Jeff Bagwell can also order top quality automatic fish and hunting feeders for all of your outdoor recreation. Contact Jeff Bagwell today, once again, at 205-799-0192 to help you build the pond or lake of your dreams. Hey Tide fans, looking for something wild right here in Tuscaloosa? Bring the kids, bring your friends, and come to Bama Reptiles and Ranch in Northport. Just minutes from campus, they've got Asian water lizards, tortoises, colorful snakes, and for the horse lovers out there, ranch supplies. They are the cleanest and healthiest reptile store in the state. And their feeders? Best you'll find anywhere. If you mention this Stingray Sports ad, you will get 10% off of your feeders. Remember, Bama Reptiles and Ranch, where exotic meets extraordinary. Welcome back inside the Stingray Show. Our guest this evening is Hunt Palmer, as we are doing the LSU preview show. And previously, we've talked about all of the skill positions on offense. We've talked about the defense. Now, Hunt, let's navigate the schedule and let's start with the Battle of Death Valleys, with LSU going to Clemson. Talk about that first game matchup for LSU, please.
Yeah, LSU sure didn't want to make it easy on themselves. That's the way it looks. They have lost five consecutive openers, started the COVID year with Mississippi State, then went out west to UCLA and lost that one, and then they lost two straight to Florida State, and then went and lost to USC in Vegas last year. So this would be six if they can't get it done at Clemson, which is just unfathomable for a program that didn't lose a non-conference regular season game from 2002 until 2016. I think it's ridiculous to even put the game on the schedule, but it's good for college football fans because it should be one heck of a showdown. It'll be 84,000 strong or whatever it is, and Clemson's got what everyone believes to be a really, really good team. So they've tried to emphasize this game. They have put 1-0 up all over the weight room, all over the practice facility. They have talked about it openly, that they have, you know, changed the way they've operated this year to focus on winning that first game, and they put as many resources into it as they possibly can. But it's on the road. It's going to be a really difficult game for LSU to go win. If they do, it could be like in 2011 when they beat Oregon and Dallas, and it springboarded them to one of the best years in the history of college football. until the last game. If they don't, you once again find yourself, this time it won't even be September. That game is actually in August. It won't even be September, and you'll find yourself trying to walk a high wire until Thanksgiving, trying to find a way to get into the playoffs. So it's going to be brutal, but there's no avoiding it now. They got to face it head on.
All right, let's just talk about the non-conference. You talked about Clemson there. Following week, you got La Tech. Then you got Southeastern. And then you have Western Kentucky.
Yeah,
right there a week before Thanksgiving. So with those teams, just talk briefly about the La Tech game, the Southeastern game, and also Western Kentucky.
Yeah, they've invited the in-state schools to play a lot. They played Nicholls last year. The 2 years prior to that, they played the two HBCUs and from the SWAC schools, Grambling and Southern. They played McNeese when Ed Ogeron's son was the quarterback and he was the head coach. They played Northwestern State in 2019. They do that a lot, and they certainly are going to welcome Southeastern and Tech in this year. Tech has had a really tough go under Sonny Cumbie. They haven't been very good at all, and I don't expect them to be very good this year. Southeastern's an FCS school that can't compete with LSU. It's a glorified scrimmage at that point. So you got those two, and then you got Western Kentucky on that weekend where everybody before rivalry weekend basically steps out of conference and beats somebody by 50. So it's not very interesting, but it is makes life easier. Ask Indiana last year. And I think LSU, if you're trying to make the playoff, they ought to have somebody else on the schedule that's not very interesting in the first game instead of Clemson. But they don't ask me. They just go schedule them. So I don't think there's a lot of meat on that bone from a non-conference perspective outside of Clemson. But that's probably the way it should be if you're trying to make sure you win 10 games.
Well, also, I look at these non-conference games as somewhat a bye week, somewhat. And so you open with Clemson on the road. Then you kind of get La Tech to recuperate, rest some guys up before you get Florida there at home. And then you get to rest and recuperate again. You got Southeastern before you take on Ole Miss there in Oxford. And then you get a true bye week before you play South Carolina. And then, like I said, at the end of the season when you play Western Kentucky, you're coming off Bama and Arkansas back-to-back before you get that game at Oklahoma. So I like how the schedule sets up with the non-conference because you got your bye weeks to work with you. You got these guys that will see four deep play and non-conference games outside of Clemson. With that, do you like the schedule or how it goes for LSU?
Yeah, relatively speaking, I mean, you're in the SEC. It's tough to cook up a quote-unquote easy one. Missouri is as close as you're going to get. But, yeah, I don't see some sort of treacherous back-to-back-to-back road games. I don't see Georgia on the schedule. I don't see Texas on the schedule. I don't see Tennessee on the schedule, who has been good. I don't think they'll be great this year. But you know, you've got very manageable home games this year. You got Vanderbilt on the road, which is a very manageable game as well. You got to go to Tuscaloosa, which is never easy, and we'll see what Oklahoma's got. But it, you know, it's a difficult schedule. But as SEC schedules go, yeah, LSU matches up pretty well every week. Again, assuming the offensive line holds up their end of the bargain.
So ultimately, how many wins do you have LSU getting this season?
I wrote a prediction column for our site, LouisianaSports.net, over the weekend, and I had them 10-2. I think it's 9-3, 10-2. I can squint and see 8-4. It's hard. It involves the offensive line cratering and or an injury to the quarterback. And I would struggle to get them to 11-1 or 12-0. That seems a little bit much for me. But it's right there in that buffer zone of the playoffs, 10-2. 9-3 is not going to get you there, I don't think. So ultimately, that's what it comes down to. And the expectations in this town are that LSU makes the playoffs. So it's things are in a fever pitch in Baton Rouge right now. We'll see how it plays out, but they certainly got a tough one coming up in a couple of weeks.
So to wrap this up, before we get out of here, Hunt, I would like for you to talk about Clemson's Death Valley versus LSU's Death Valley. Talk about that whole concept, please.
You want me to be truthful, Stingray?
Yes, I do. I do.
I don't really care if Clemson wants to call. If Clemson wants to call their stadium, our Death Valley is way better than LSU's Death Valley. That's fine with me. I don't care. My opinion is, if you ask 100 college football fans, where's Death Valley? 94 of them are going to say Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
I think that LSU's probably got a little bit more mystique and lore to it over the decades.
Right.
Dabo Sweeney's built an incredible program. It's an incredibly difficult place to play. They're 70-5 there over the last 75. LSU's is bigger. It's more storied. Clemson's was first, apparently, I don't think you settle the score with these two games that are coming up. I think LSU won a pretty important one back in January of 2020 with Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence on the field.
Yeah.
But look, they want to call it Death Valley. I'm all for them. It's fine. I got things to worry about in Baton Rouge. I'll handle that.
Yes.
here's another silly question. Every team named Tigers plays a version of the Tiger Rag.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard Clemson's?
I don't know a lot about Clemson football. I'm excited for them to come to Baton Rouge next year so I can kind of see how they do things. Of course, they were in the Superdome for the national championship game. But, no, I don't know. I know they got Howard's Rock. I know Dabo runs fast down the hill, and I know the town's on a lake. That's about all I got for Clemson.
Right.
Like I said, every college team named Tiger plays Tiger Rag. But Clemson's, I was like, Is this like the club mix? Like, what are we doing here? Like,
their mascot, the non-live one, the dress up guy, looks a little zoned out. If we're being honest, so yeah, they do things a little bit differently there. They're in Clemson.
Yeah, I think he went to the THC store. I think he had a gummy or two. I don't know what's going on with him. He looks paranoid.
So, Hunt, look, man, we have thoroughly enjoyed you joining us for the LSU preview show. Before we let you get out of here, any final words about this LSU football team in 2025?
Yeah, it's an exciting time. This month of August has taken a long time. Certainly, it's not going to be low on drama in that first game. If LSU can find a way to get out of the blocks 3-0 with Clemson and Florida on that schedule, look out. I mean, this is a national championship contender that might be ranked first or second in the country. If things are 1-2 after 3 weeks, you lose to Clemson and Florida comes into Baton Rouge and beats you, right, it's going to be – the pitchforks will be out in Baton Rouge. So there's a lot of anticipation, and it all kind of hangs in the balance in those first couple of weeks. If they're able to hit the ground running and do some things well, it could be a really, really fun fall around here. We hadn't had one of those since 2019, but there are some flaws in this team that got to get worked out. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be high on drama, and that's what we like in the content business here. So I'm looking forward to it. I know you all will be watching, and I appreciate y'all letting me hang out for a little bit.
And Hunt, as we walk out the door, we've been asking everybody this question here this week. Who do you ultimately have the confetti falling on in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta as the SEC champion?
I like Georgia. I mean, they gave them a brutal schedule last year with at Oxford, at Austin, at Tuscaloosa, and their quarterback got hurt, and they still won. So I'm just not in the business of picking against Kirby too often at this point. So I'll take Georgia, which is real chalky, but it'd be something. Fellas, you could get on back there. They were there a couple years ago with Jaden Daniels, but they didn't really have a shot that day. That team wasn't ready to compete on the big stage. This one could be, so we'll see.
Look, man, thank you as always. Enjoy covering the LSU game there at Clemson, and we would love to catch up with you during the season to continue to talk about the LSU Tigers.
Yeah, y'all reach out anytime. Happy to help.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Thank y'all.
So, guys, that is going to wrap up the LSU preview show. Really do want to thank Hunt Palmer for joining us again from 104.7 ESPN Radio out of Baton Rouge. When we come back on the Wednesday evening edition of the Stingray Show, right after Hey Coach, we're going to be doing our Roll Tide Alabama preview show as Joe Gaither of Bama Central will join us to do a deep dive into the Crimson Tide of Alabama. That is after Hey Coach concludes tomorrow night right here on the Stingray Show, and then we will be back at our normal time of 6 p.m. on Thursday evening, and we will catch you tomorrow for the Alabama football preview show. And Heath, I will leave you with this, just like I've done every show. Go Tigers!
I see you channeled your inner Coach O.
Go Tigers!
You ever have those Cajun sausage hot dogs at LSU games?
No.
Oh, they're the best. You're missing out. You haven't lived, Steven. Never lived. Gotta get in the car and go. Gotta go now.
I've never been to an LSU game, but I want to. It's on my bucket list.
Oh, you gotta go. Make sure you get that Cajun dog, man. That's some good stuff.
Dude, that was freaking awesome.
Good.